You're listening to the Iterators of the Imperium.
Hi, I'm Miss, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Ryan. And you're listening to Season 4 of the Iterators of the Imperium podcast, the podcast in which Ryan is the expert on Warhammer 40k, and I am the noob trying to learn about the Warhammer universe. And let's just get straight into it. So, Ryan, what are we talking about today?
First things first, Miss. First thing is first. We have two things we need to do first.
Yes.
First of all, I'm going to make a point of doing this. We do have a Patreon. We had mentioned it for a while in one of the seasons. We made it part of the intro. And then we kind of stopped because we realized we weren't doing anything with it. But we do have a patron. So I want to throw the name up there and just put out a thanks to, I believe, Matthias. I believe. I don't know how you say words.
I'm sorry if we're butchering your name, but hey.
We probably are, but thank you anyway. And thank please forgive us. Moving on. Miz, the other thing we have to do.
With the Patreon thing, I actually do want to say a thing. We are actually planning on doing some more stuff with the whole Patreon thing, getting you guys who wants to support, and if even more people wants to support in the future. We are thinking about like making more out of it, not just on Patreon itself, but featuring it, you know, around the episodes. Just saying.
In the studio. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Would you take it over, Ryan?
Yes. So, first thing we need to do before we get into today's episode is we need to do your bullshittery of the day.
Yes.
Naturally. Yes. So, the term I want you to, you know, make up a meaning for today, I assume, is the pain glove.
The pain glove.
Pain glove.
All right, Ryan. Ryan, let me just get into my mega mind mode, all right? Let me just get into my mega mind mode. I am thinking, the pain glove, you say. I don't know why I'm thinking like all Thanos right now.
Okay.
I'm thinking this definitely has to be a weapon.
All right.
Am I in? I'm in the right ballpark, aren't I, Ryan?
No.
Were you serious?
Yeah.
Well, it's my guess still. I'm going to have to make up some bullshittery with my mega minds right now.
Yeah.
The pain glove is a replica of the Thanos infinitive glove, and it can, well, essentially do the same thing as Thanos, but this is Warhammer, so it will only be destruction and death it will be used for. That's the pain glove, in my opinion. That's the mega mind.
Fantastic.
But I apparently I'm wrong. What is the pain glove? How's that not a weapon, though? How is that not a weapon?
We've actually talked about this before. I was just banking on you not remembering.
Well, thank you, Ryan. And my short-term memory. What is the pain
today,
glove, Ryan? Oh, wait, actually, no, it's come later.
Oh, I can actually just explain it, because it's not like a part of the story to explain it, but it does come up in the story. But yeah,
right.
Well, I'll explain it when it arrives in the story, although its purpose is not entirely important to the plot. But we'll get there. Today we're going to be talking about the boys in yellow, the Imperial Fists of Rogal Dorn.
Nice.
Defenders of Terra.
I like them.
Yeah. It's nice armor.
Earth's Protectors.
That's exactly it, yeah.
I would like to call this one Bumblebee, because it looks like...
It does a bit.
I'm sorry.
There's chapters that look a lot more like Bumblebee as well.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have talked about the Imperial Fist a lot, surprisingly. Not that you'd ever remember it. Because obviously we've talked about the Legions, we've talked about their Primarch specifically, but they actually turned up more than any other Legion in Season 1 when we were doing the timeline, because not only are they in the Heresy, they also play a major role in the 13th Black Crusade, because they're the ones that have the ship, the Phalanx, the massive fucking fortress ship that goes to help out. But also, remember the War of the Beast with a giant orc that Vulcan bodies, just tackles into a generator? Yeah, that's when these guys all came back together to protect Terra. So they actually turn up in a lot of major events. So we've probably talked about them, realistically, more than any other Legion, interestingly enough.
They just always seem to pop up.
Yeah, but the reason is because they are, like, the defenders of Terra. That's their whole thing, is they're like directly tied to Earth. Mm. Whereas the rest of the Legions have like an area they look after, or like something like that. They kind of stick to their home world's kind of area, or a particular subsector, or a particular kind of area of space. These guys are like, no, yeah, we're just staying at home.
Yeah, and since, you know, a lot of the stories we're talking about is about Terra, or in that region, you know.
Yes.
It's natural that we're talking about these, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But the what we're going to do is, again, the whole point of the season is getting us up to speed with that particular Legion or whatever, so that we can talk about them in the current day, right? And yep, the things that happen during the Heresy and stuff aren't necessarily the parts of their story that carry forward into the modern day. Like with the Thousand Sons, it wasn't the fall of Magnus or anything like that that carries forward into the modern day. It's more than anything, particularly, because obviously Magnus is still around doing stuff, but particularly Ahriman is the part that has a major storyline in the modern day. So there's usually these like side sections that are the part that's actually carried on till now, rather than like stuff that happened during the Heresy. So we're kind of filling in those gaps that we haven't really talked about yet. So we're going to do a quick summary of where these guys turned up, because we have mentioned it in the past, in Season 1 and so on. So we're going to go over that stuff again, but probably mention a bit more detail that's like pertinent to what we're trying to get across today. And then I'm going to tell you the story of a particular character, which their storyline is what carries forward most with these guys. All right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, moving forward from there, as you may or may not remember, the Imperial Fists were the Legion in charge of the defense of Terra during the siege. Right? It was Dorne that manned the, like, that built the battlements and everything like that. And that concept of them being like the defenders of Terra, that's basically set who they were from that moment forward. Right, they will only ever view themselves as responsible for the defense of Terra, basically.
Yeah.
More so than anything, because they failed at it. The palace got breached. The palace got fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And the emperor died while they were meant to be protecting him.
Yep.
Wasn't really within their control, but that did happen. And they never really got over it. So it's kind of like, survivor guilt of the entire Legion. So yeah, that's really how that went.
Yeah.
So after the end of the Heresy, most of the remaining loyalists, like the Legions, kind of set about rebuilding and stabilizing the Imperium. But the Imperial Fists actually went into a period of mourning because of this massive failure of their duty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was so bad, Dorne even changed his armor to just be black. Like, he just repainted his armor to show he was in a period of mourning.
his goth face.
Basically. And basically, during this period, they were all just kind of depressed and then got incredibly violent. So their mourning took the form of depression and vicious acts of vengeance.
Generally just unstable, you know, beings.
Yeah, but it was like, we hate ourselves for our failure, so we're going to project that outwards and sacrifice our own lives by desperately hunting down our enemies to the death of ourselves. So it was just carnage with the Imperial Fists scattering into the galaxy to murder anything that may or may not be a traitor.
God damn.
Yeah. But if I used to call you brother, I'm going to call you a pile of just mush when I'm done.
Aye. A murderous rampage, essentially, right?
Essentially, yes. Real healthy way to deal with your feelings.
Probably not, but you know. Well, actually, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I've never been betrayed by several hundred thousand brothers at once, so I really can't say I...
I'm kidding.
Danes breed like rabbits.
Wait, what? No, that's just me. No.
Just you. Are you creating your own brothers?
No, I continue.
You know what? We're not going down that path.
No, continue.
We're not going down the uncle dad route today. So the next thing that kind of goes on after that whole series of murderous carnage is the Codex Crisis. And we've talked about this before. We never really talked about it in this particular kind of view, which is, obviously, you know that Gilliman announced the Codex Astartes while he was in charge. So we're splitting up the legions into chapters because none of us can be trusted because we all trusted Horus, and look how that went. So this was announced, right? But he had to, like, order Dorne back to Terra just to tell him about it. Because they couldn't get a hold of him, basically. So eventually gets them all together and he's like, right, this is the plan. This is what we're doing. Dorne obviously was totally against it, and so was Rus. Whereas Jagatai Khan, Korax, and Gilliman were all for it. But I believe that the main reason that Dorne was against it was because he believed that splitting up the Legion into the smaller chapters and having them all ran by their own individual chapter masters, that would all be hierarchy wise on the same level as him running his chapter, would mean that he couldn't defend Terra as well because he would just have less troops to do it, basically. Yeah. So he was immediately enraged by this. This caused a fair bit of animosity, not only among, like, the brother Primarchs, but also among just, like, everyone. Like, everyone took sides. It almost caused another civil war. It almost caused, like, another heresy-level war. Because apparently an Imperial Navy ship fired upon one of Dorne's ships because of this whole thing this whole argument that was going on. So, like, it almost started another civil war.
Relax, yeah. God damn.
But the Imperial Fists have this this common belief, which is cleansing through pain, right? So if you personally have done something wrong, you can only really get over it or get past it by going through pain of an equivalent level, right? So this is where the pain glove comes in. This is a form of meditation for this legion. They wear a glove that puts them in unbelievably excruciating pain, and they do it for extended periods of time as a form of meditation. This is where it dawns on you. We have talked about this before, right?
We have talked about this before.
Yeah.
But no, actually, Ryan.
Yes.
I want to have a star for this episode as well, because it can be used as a weapon. It's kind of a weapon.
Yeah, you could just punch someone while wearing it, I suppose. Or you could just force it onto your enemy.
Exactly, that's what I meant. Like, you could force it onto your enemy, then it's a weapon. I want half a star, right?
Alright, I'll give you. It could be used as a good torture device. I can't deny that.
Thank you.
Also, because of the size of Dorne's hands, I imagine it is gigantic and weighs a ton. So and you probably could just launch it out of a catapult and murder someone.
Right, yeah.
So when you run out of bolter rounds, you start throwing any heavy thing you can at them.
Now you turn it on the inside out, and then, you know, it's... I don't know, does it shock you? What did it do? Like,
I'm not entirely sure how it does it, to be honest with you. I've never bothered to look into it.
It's placebo. It doesn't do anything, but you think it does something to it.
You just psychologically torture yourself. It's why it only like works on, like, the PTSD Legion.
Exactly. That was a good one, actually. Yeah. Placebo effect.
Yeah. So Dorne eventually goes into, like, 7 days straight of just wearing the pain glove as meditation. And when he comes out of it, he's decided that the Codex Astartes is the right way to go. And from this moment on, they announce they are going to take part in the Codex Astartes properly. They will be exemplars of the Codex, right? Okay. They will be a perfect shining example of what it means to be Codex compliant. But he first believes that the entire Legion needs a cleansing through pain. Because it's not just him that's carrying this failure. All of his sons are carrying it too, and they all have this belief of cleansing through pain. So they all need a collective pain to bond them, but also to give them a way, like, an out for their own kind of misery.
Wait, why does this remind me of like old school, like in the Christian movies when they whip themselves on the back?
Yeah, flagellation. Like, you know, yeah, it's exactly it's like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same concept anyway. Yeah.
But that's crazy though.
Yeah. Luckily for Dorn, Perturabo provided a perfect situation for a cleansing through pain for his entire legion.
Yeah.
So, you know how Perturabo and Rogue Aldorn were both considered masters of siege warfare?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, as you may remember, Perturabo's whole thing about this about the Horus Heresy was it was brothers versus brothers, right? But then there was a point where it stopped being that when he realized there was just demons running all over the battlefield and shit like that. It was like, this is just Horus being used by some malevolent gods. I don't care. I'm not interested anymore. So he left. He just abandoned the place. It's like, I'm out. To him, that the siege was a chance for him to test himself against Dorn to see who was better at siege warfare once and for all. But he never got that because he had this like dawning realization that Horus was just a pawn, that they were all just pawns. So he just left. But luckily, in the interim, what he had been doing was building the Iron Cage, possibly the most impenetrable fortress in the galaxy. The idea being, it was him basically mocking Dorn to be like, well, I built a fortress, but you can't get through this, dickhead. I broke the walls of your fortress. Let's see you do the same, asshole. Basically, it was just a big taunt, like, come at me, bro.
I dare you. I double dare you.
But luckily for both of them, I guess, because it's what they both wanted, for Perturabo, it was lucky that Dorn was looking for this way to cleanse his entire legion through pain, and for Dorn, it was lucky that Perturabo had built the perfect place for it. So Dorn basically just runs headfirst into that trap to see what'll happen. And because, obviously, they are running headfirst into an enemy stronghold, purposely built to kill them in particular, it goes pretty bad. And eventually Gilliman and his mass reinforcements have to rock up and, you know, scare off Perturabo and his kids. But after that whole Iron Cage incident, Dorn sets about the reorganization of his chapter, right? He believes that the pain they all went through during the Iron Cage was cleansing for them. So they no longer carried the guilt of their failure at Terra. So they were now able to move forward and split up into the chapters and still do their jobs. That was the idea. So the Legion obviously split up into a bunch of chapters, right? There were four initial second founding chapters, right? Obviously, they always have one that maintains the name and colours and leadership of the original Legion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we still had the Imperial Fist as a chapter now, with technically Chapter Master Rogue Aldorn and so on and so forth, right? They kept the Phalanx as their home base and everything else stays the same for them, right? But then we had a bunch of other chapters turn up. We had the Crimson Fists turn up. They were one of the three that were founded from it. We had the Soul Drinkers, and we had the Black Templars.
Yeah.
So these are the three chapters that came out of the original Legion that weren't the original kind of named one. And the way it worked is that the more kind of zealous and fervorous members of the Legion became the Black Templars, and the more level-headed became the Crimson Fists. And we don't talk about the Soul Drinkers at the end there because they are now renegades. So they have an entire storyline, and we'll get into that in another day.
Yeah,
but Ryan, don't talk about them. They're officially evil, so we don't care about them anymore.
I just want to add something real quick, Ryan.
Yes.
Have you noticed here in the studio?
Yes.
What I have in front of me.
Yes.
Is it in the fitting?
It is, but that's an ultramarine.
Oh. No mind. I can't really see it. It's very bad. Pretty modern. No mind.
Yeah, it's an ultramarine, yeah.
It looks the same.
Similar.
No, I can't see it. It's too blurry. It's fine.
That's fine. Don't worry about it. So yeah, these are the three chapters that came out of the original Legion at the, you know, the second founding. And, you know, everyone kind of moved on from there. They all acted as perfect examples of Codex compliant chapters. Now, that's as far as the Imperium is concerned. As far as we are concerned, we know that this was all a lie. They were basically pretending to go along with it because Dorne had installed the Last Wall protocol in all of them, which is an absolute, like, it's a total rule against the Codex Astartes. The whole point is they're supposed to be individual chapters with their own leadership, not answering to anyone else other than, like, the Emperor. Or the Imperial Regent, whoever it may be. So, modern-day Gilliman is the regent again, because the Emperor is still on his chair. So, they don't have to answer to anyone else. But, because Dorne instilled in all the Chapter Masters the Last Wall Protocol, that if you're called upon, you all get the fuck back to Terra, and all act as one team again, for the love of God. But because they all carried this kind of guilt in the back of their minds about their failure at Terra, it just stayed with them. So it's still to this day is a thing among all these chapters that are allegedly perfect examples of the Codex, but they all are not because they all have this rule that they're technically still a Legion, which is quite fun.
Yeah.
And obviously we saw the Last Wall Protocol be used only once, and that was during the War of the Beast, when the massive orc army, you know, the size of which never before seen, decided to attack the Imperium. And the Imperial Fists set in place the Last Wall Protocol, formed back into the Imperial Fist Legion, and defended Terra.
Yeah.
Pretty standard stuff. For the record, because the Imperial Fists are a fleet-based chapter, technically. They don't have a home world. They just have a giant ship that moves around that they all live in. That's their base. The Imperial Fists are the chapter, I guess, with the closest ties to Terra itself. So it wouldn't be uncommon on Terra for you to, like, if you're going to see a Space Marine, it's going to be an Imperial Fist. It's unlikely. Like, you'll probably, like, once every generation, someone may see them walking around. But you're not going to see, like, flesh terrors walking around. You're going to see an Imperial Fist. Although, it's quite cool. There's a lot of stories set around, like, the 13th Black Crusade kind of time. And in those, like, a bunch of them are, like, about Inquisitors and stuff set on Terra. So they're just normal people doing, like, detective shit, which is quite cool. They're really cool storylines. But the Imperial Fist even turn up in those stories to, like, help save the day and shit. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
So even, like, while, like, the Light of Astronomicon was gone and demons were running all over Terra and that, the Imperial Fist just rocked up to help gun people down. Quality. Love it. Big fan.
Let's go.
Now, that is about as much of a summary about what we've already talked about as you need. So we're going to get on to the main point of today, right?
All right.
And I'm going to tell you the individual story of one particular character.
Right? Okay.
And this is the character that sets how this Legion moves forward into the modern day, more than any other, I would say.
Okay.
The most relevant part, anyway. So we can get rid of these guys. Because we are talking about this boy.
This lad.
This guy.
This huge among humongous beast.
Yeah. What do you think about this guy? Just as a curiosity, what's your thoughts on this boy?
When you say thoughts, like right off the bat, it looks like somebody who should be evil boys, not?
That's fair.
Just like, because, like, every time you mention a character, or like a species, whatever it is in Warhammer, they have black skin and red eyes. They're always evil. So this looks like somebody who brings death from above. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Actually, interestingly, right, black and white are the colors of the kind of the priests of the chapters usually. So if you're like, if you're one of the kind of the I suppose, what's the term? I'm blanking on the term, but like if you got like the Reclusiarch is the leader of like the kind of the priest side of a chapter, usually their like faction within the chapter will wear like black and white and stuff like that to show that they are, you know, not your typical marine, basically. It shows their position. But yeah. This guy is not one of them. He is not part of the kind of the priesthood or anything like that of the chapters. This is just what he was told to paint up like that day. So, we're going to get in this guy's story, right? This is Sigismund, which is a very cool name.
I've heard that before.
I think I've probably mentioned it in the past. He's a pretty important dude when it comes to the Imperial Fist.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Go on.
Yeah. So, right, his storyline, as far as we're going to do it, we're going to start off during the Horus Heresy. Actually, during the Siege of Terra, right? So we're, like, talking end dates, right? But to give you an idea, this guy is, like, one of the most incredible warriors in any of the Space Marine Legions, right? He is possibly only rivaled by the Primarchs themselves, right? There is, like, no other Space Marine that can beat this dude. He is the best of the best, right? Obviously, he'll get stalked by a Primarch, but he'll kick the shit out of him in the process. Right? He is, like, the toughest of the tough. But it's believed that the reason for that is because he holds the kind of the main goal of the Emperor, the Emperor's view of what the future should be, of, like, his goal for humanity. He holds that in such high regard that he's fueled by this, like, unbelievable burning fury, but he controls it with, like, a will of iron. So he's just this unstoppable force of death towards the Emperor's enemies.
Alrighty then.
Yeah. It's to such a point that he is, like, a legend among Space Marines. Even, like, before the Heresy or anything like that. If you said Sigismund, everyone knew who you meant. No one missed the story about this guy. Right? He was a legend beyond recognition.
Yeah.
But during the Heresy, during the siege, I suppose, it was decided that the Emperor would have a champion to fight in his stead. Right? Because the Emperor couldn't go out into the battlefield and start kicking ass, obviously. Start punching Space Marines to death in the middle of the field. So it was decided that he would have a champion. And Rogal Dorn specifically singled out Sigismund, his first captain. So this guy was second in command of the entire Legion. So he singled him out to be the Emperor's champion. With that come a couple of things. The first is that his armor and war gear and everything were repainted, right? So he no longer wore the yellow of his legion, which he was quite upset about, but his legion's Reclusiarch kind of comforted him, because not only has Dorn said that they should do this, but also it's a sign that the Emperor's eyes are upon him. That's why the kind of the priesthoods and stuff wear the different colours. It's to show that they are within the Emperor's sight. And that's why he has to do this too. So he ends up striding out into the battlefield with his black sword and his armour painted like this, just marching through the kind of war-torn battlefields of Terra, like, just waltzes out into the carnage, just looking for any champions of the traitors, any champions of chaos, and challenging them to one-on-one mortal combat and slaying them in the Emperor's name. And in his defense, I guess, or to promote him even further, he even bestowed that wondrous kind of benefit, I guess, of slaying the Emperor's enemies to anyone that got in his way, not just champions of the enemy. If you were a soldier or a demon or anything else, he would kill you just the same.
This guy sounds macho, you know.
Oh, he's a beast. And he's like, yeah, but think of a He-Man if he was like devoutly religious. Just preaching while murdering people.
Thou shalt not, you know.
Stand Thou shalt not get way. In my fucking way. As he like kicks a Space Marine to the ground.
I like it.
Yeah. So this was his kind of, his role during the siege, was murdering the enemies of the Emperor, specifically the champions, intentionally, but obviously cut down anyone that gets in his way. He actually spent a great deal of time looking for Abaddon, but he never really got a hold of him. People just kept getting in the way and dying for Abaddon so he could leave. So they never actually got to fight, which is quite upsetting, because Abaddon would not have made it off the planet.
No.
Yeah. He probably would have died where he stood, to be honest with you. that aside, when it finally came time for Dorn to go with the Emperor for the final challenge against Horus, Sigismund was actually left to lead the ground forces against the traitors. So he was left in charge of the defences when Dorn fucked off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, obviously, we know how the whole siege thing ends, right? So this guy goes back to fulfilling his normal role within the Legion as first captain. And he does it for a long time. But when it comes round to time for the reorganization of the Legion into chapters, Dorn realizes that there is no better person to lead the Black Templars than Sigismund. So he goes from being First Captain Sigismund, champion of the Emperor, to High Marshal Sigismund, chapter master of the Black Templars.
That's which is very cool. Title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is why, I'll show you again, if we look back at the Black Templars, this is their typical kind of colour scheme. They actually all repainted their armour to match Sigismund's armour as the champion of the Emperor.
Yeah.
So the whole Legion is designed like this, specifically because they all want to emulate what Sigismund stood for as the Emperor's champion. Which is quite cool. But this is the only Space Marine chapter that's, like, known for being devoutly religious towards the Emperor. Because the rest of them all know, like, the Emperor was not a god and is not a god. These guys are like, do I fuck? He's a god! Like, half of you were alive during the siege. You know he's not. And they're like, nope, don't know what you're talking about. God Emperor. Ugh. So, obviously, the time of the second founding, when these extra chapters were being made from all the legions, it was quite a difficult time for all of the Space Marine, because a huge amount of them, were being cast out of their legion and into these chapters and forced to take up a new title, right? A new livery and everything. So a lot of them felt like they were being kind of forced out, and a lot of them felt like they were being forced to, like, give up on what they were, right? They were losing their identities in a way. So in this time, Sigismund swore an oath, right? And it was an oath that he would prove his loyalty, and he would not rest in his persecution of the Emperor's enemies, right? And interestingly, every High Marshal since Sigismund has sworn the exact same oath he did before leaving Terra on the day that the chapter was founded. That's like part of their ritual to become the High Marshal. You've got to swear Sigismund's oath. But the swearing of that oath was in itself like a declaration of a crusade against the enemies of the Emperor. And with every swearing of the oath, the crusade continues. So since, like, I guess the 31st millennia, the Black Templars have been in one long crusade to kill all of the traitors.
Damn.
Yeah, they do not fuck around.
No.
These guys are committed. It's maybe They're not loyal. A good thing, but... Yeah.
Oh, that's fine. It's fine.
They are like the most loyal of all the chapters.
Yeah.
A little too loyal if you look at them too long.
Nah. It can't be too loyal. That's fine. Right?
I don't know. It starts to approach heresy.
Heretic. I like it.
Yeah. So this is he was another one of Sigismund just being an absolute unit. So
damn, looked like he kind of like Predator?
Kind of, yeah.
Is it just me? Like, you know, I'm getting Predator vibes.
No, I can kind of see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might just be this image, though.
Maybe, yeah. So, the story of Sigismund actually ends with Abaddon, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So, in 781 of M31, so 31st millennium, or, yeah, the year 31781, right? That was when Abaddon finally reappeared, right? Because you got to remember that after the siege, all the traitors kind of scattered into the galaxy. And then there's a period, which is the Great Scouring, where the loyalists all, like, herd them like sheep back into the Eye of Terror. But since Abaddon and all that went back into the Eye of Terror, they've never been seen for, like, 500 years. So, so now you've got the High Lords of Terror running Terror, and they've all kind of forgot about the traitors. But in that 500 years, two things have happened. One, High Marshal Sigismund has never once stopped looking for Abaddon because he wants to stomp him into the dirt because he never got to Terra. But during that 500 years, you've also got Abaddon's forming the Black Legion of all the kind of scattered remains of the others that didn't want to be loyal to a Primarch anymore. So in 781, that's when Abaddon finally reappears from the Eye of Terror, launching his first Black Crusade.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, not a good time for anyone. But he found himself face-to-face with... Well, he found himself face-to-face with two things. One, a totally unprepared Imperium, because they had forgotten about these guys. But also, this guy, because he never stopped looking for him. The second he popped up, Sigismund flew in like John Cena, ready to dump tackle him.
And his name is... Hell yeah.
I reckon you could shout his name as Sigismund to the same kind of pattern, the same kind of rhythm. I reckon you could make it fit.
Can I do it in the Danish way? And his name is Sigismund. I'm sorry.
Oh, that was bloody excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, remind me of that later. Anyway, so by this point, you got to remember, Sigismund is like 1,000 years old. He's well over 1,000 years old, actually. So he is aged, right? He is old AF, but he's still like an angry, zealous space marine, so he's ready to kick ass. So him and, you know, shitty version of Horus get into a big brawl. But by this point, obviously, Abaddon's done the whole thing of killing a clone of Horus and getting his claw and all that stuff. So he's wielding the talon of Horus, the big claw weapon, against the black sword of Sigismund. So two of them end up locked in fiery battle, and Sigismund runs him through, just straight impales the fucker with his sword. Unfortunately, you know what the main downside to using a big old claw as a weapon is? It's that you can't reach your enemy. Like, if you can't reach them, you can't hurt them, right? And the issue with impaling someone with a sword is that you have to get real close. So when Sigismund impaled him, Abaddon just took it as an opportunity to just gouge his stomach open and just disemboweled Sigismund, obviously killing him in the process.
Oh,
just gutted him like a fish.
That's rough.
Yeah, and that is how Sigismund died, unfortunately. That was the end of Sigismund.
That's the spoiler.
But there is one more part. Sigismund plays one more major role in the story. Because Abaddon took his body, attached a note to it, and sent it back to Terra. To announce the Long War, which is the, like, 11,000-year-long war between the traitors from the Eye of Terror and all the loyalists and the rest of the Imperium. And it was announced using a note on Sigismund's dead body. And all the note said was, "We are returned."
Bruh. Isn't that also what they did, like, back in the days? Like, I know Warhammer likes to take inspiration from real-life events. Isn't that what they used to do back in the day as well, like in war?
Yeah, you would send the enemy's leader's body back with like a note on it. So
yeah,
if they sent like a commander, or sorry, if they sent like a lieutenant and a troop to attack you, you'd kill them all and send some of them back with a note basically telling you to go and fuck yourself.
That's how they communicate. Relationships, healthy communication, you know. Let's go.
Exactly.
That's how you keep it healthy. Let's go.
Yep, that's it. So interestingly, since then, the Black Templar still maintain the process of naming an Emperor's Champion. They have this little ritual they do before any like any kind of, I guess, crusade, but any like major campaign or anything. They do this ritual to have one of their troops have a vision. And if they have this vision, it means that they are the Emperor's Champion and they are like kind of dubbed as such for the remainder of that crusade, which is quite cool. But the thing is, other legions have had Emperor's Champions. It was a thing that people just did for a while, but it's kind of disappeared over time. It's kind of died out. But the Black Templars never stopped doing it. So to this day, they still do it all the time. Every campaign, every crusade, they have an Emperor's Champion be named, which is interesting. But it's just because Sigismund is like their mini god. So they're like, we follow him because he follows the real god, right? So we do things the way he did. So their whole thing is to follow his example. But in the modern day, the most prevalent part, storyline-wise, of the Imperial Fists is the Black Templars. They turn up the most, storyline-wise. So that's why we need to talk about them today. Although, do you want to see their current High Marshal?
Oh, give it to me. Yeah.
This is High Marshal Hellbricht.
Bruh. I reckon I could take this guy in an arm wrestle, not gonna lie.
No, yeah. Without the armor, maybe.
Nah, why they always look so epic, right? I love Warhammer freaking artists, man. Is that like also, a fan art?
No, I got it off the community site. So possibly, but not that they accredited. So I assume it's official. I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, someone please let me know, because I would like to credit.
Yeah, because honestly, I'm just saying this, like, there's some good fan art in Warhammer. Yeah. It's actually crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
I actually found a really cool piece of artwork of Sigismund and Abaddon locked in war, like, in their final battle. But I couldn't, like, it was obviously someone's fan art. You could tell because it was very stylized. But I couldn't find who made it. So I'm like, I'm not showing it and then going, like, I don't know who made it, though. Like, I'm not showing it if I can't say who did it. I at least want to be able to credit the artist. So I apologize. But seriously, have a Google at it. There's loads of amazing artwork out there for it.
Yeah, but I reckon we could just feature them anyways, Ryan. And if anybody knows it, put it down in the comments. Or if you're watching the one who's made that, we're a big fan.
That is very true. I don't disagree with your concept, right? But I don't want to do it for one very specific reason, and it's that if you're like part of, say, a really prevalent fan art community, like cosplay community or something, which I was for like 6 years, right? There's a lot of stuff goes on where people do fan art and other accounts will copy it and then intentionally not credit them. And even if people correct them, they just delete the comments that are correcting them, or they'll turn off comments or stuff like that. And I don't want to like feed into that kind of culture or mentality at all. So if I can't credit it, I'd rather not show it than show it without crediting it. Because there's so many people do it intentionally and it's such a shitty thing to do. And I really just want people to get the credit they deserve. So I don't want to be even accidentally feeding into that mentality. So I apologize. Although, for the record, if anyone has fan art they've done that they want shown, I'll happily throw it up on the screen, even if it's not relevant. Just get in touch. We can just,
make it slide slow.
Yeah, we can do like 5 minutes at the end of an episode where we just show off people's amazing artwork.
Hell I'd do that. I'm down. Yeah, easy.
Yeah. Get in touch. But that is about everything I needed to say about the Imperial Fist today.
Well, Do you want me to round it out now then?
Yeah, if you'd like to. I'm just going to throw up Matthias again.
Yeah, I was about to say,
in front of the amazing Helbrecht. Just for dramatic. This is how cool we feel. Like, this is how cool we feel our Patreon supporters are.
That's how
I don't know what words I was trying to say. I've not practiced that. I'm bad at plugging.
That's how Matthias wakes up in the morning, Ryan, like on the cliffside, you know, just be like, I'm ready for the day. Absolute chat. But yeah, I want to round us out. So thank you guys for listening to this episode of Iterators of the Imperium podcast, season 4. Yes. It's been me, Mess. And of course, the best narrator in the game, Ryan. And we will see you in the next one. Take care and peace.
Bye.